Today's program has been brought to you by Cane Vineyard and Winery, a Napa Valley winery committed to respecting the soil and dedicated to the creation of three Cabernet blends. For more information, visit cane5.com. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Thank you for tuning in to the Heritage Radio Network. You're listening to a special community session, and I'm your host, Erin Fairbanks. Today, we are on the line with Julie Silverbrook of Consource.org. Julie, welcome to Heritage.
Thank you. I'm glad to be with you this morning.
So we are going to talk about a project that you're launching at Consource.org, looking to democratize access to information and documents around the Constitution. But why don't we start out by giving our listeners a little bit of a sense of what it is you're looking to do?
Oh, so I should mention that we've actually been around since 2005, but the process of document acquisition and digitization is dynamic and is a process that we continue daily. But our project, the Constitutional Sources Project, or CONSORCE for short, began in 2005 and continues today with just a really pure mission, which is to facilitate greater research and understanding of U.S. constitutional history by connecting American citizens and those abroad to the documentary history of the Constitution's creation, ratification, and amendment.
So one of the things that I was surprised to hear is that this, you know, kind of didn't already exist. I think there's a real expectation with regards to information in these days that you can essentially go on the internet and find whatever you need. And maybe you can talk a little bit about why that isn't the case with regards to the documents that you guys are working on.
That's right. So part of the reason why these documents historically have not been, although more recently projects like CONSORCE and the National Archives and other archival institutions have sought to put more of these documents online, part of the reason they have historically not been accessible is because the materials are actually stored in museums and archives and actually held in the private papers of individuals here in the United States and also in Europe, primarily in England. That sort of holding of the documents requires, in order to get it up online, very careful scanning and digitization and then editing of those documents so that you can get an accurate transcript of these historical texts up online. And that takes a lot of time, a lot of energy, and importantly, attention to detail. Most of CONSORCE's staff is made up of attorneys, myself included, and we understand the importance of accuracy in transcribing the documents for public consumption. Sometimes, there's this interesting federal court case over recess appointments, and the outcome of the case turned on the meaning of the word "the." So having that word in the document accurately transcribed is hugely important, and so the process takes a lot of time, and it requires people with expertise and training. So I think that's a large part of the reason why it has taken so long. It's a part of the reason why groups like CONSORCE have to work daily to get these materials up and freely available for citizens.
And you did say editing in there. So I'm curious, that's where my ears perked up. I'm like, editing, isn't it just kind of, you're copying and reposting? Can you talk a little bit more about the editorial process?
So this goes into documentary editing in general, but I will also speak specifically about CONSORCE. So how it works is, if the archival manuscript is capable of being digitally scanned, it will then go and be OCR'd, which is an optical scan of the text, which then turns it into a readable text format, which would, you know, look like a Microsoft Word document or something like that. That scanning process is not 100% accurate. So you actually have to edit out any of the errors. So you have to compare the OCR scanned transcript to the archival manuscript to make sure that they are identical. And this is something that ConSource does and other reputable websites that put these materials up there. We're, you know, going through the process of making sure that everything up is 100% accurate.
Okay, that makes sense. Now, I know for us here at the Radio Network, from the very beginning, it was important for us to be creating an archive and, you know, an oral history, so to speak, of the conversations happening here at the network and vis-a-vis the network around the country and the world regarding food. And to make it kind of searchable and accessible seemed like this really great public service. And I'm wondering, you know, as we move forward into a more digital age, you know, what maybe some of our expectations can be with regards to archive and how do we decide as consumers, like who to trust and who not to trust with regards to accessing materials like the ones that you're procuring or the ones that we're archiving on our website? I mean, what do we look for to feel kind of like we're getting the best resources that are available?
I think first and foremost, you should be looking at, you know, whether or not the organization that runs the digital library or digital archive is reputable and authoritative. And something I would recommend doing is, you know, take a look at the staff, see what the staff's experience is, take a look at the various boards. You know, do they have a board of directors? ConSource has a board of directors. Do they have an academic advisory board that's involved in the process of acquiring content and putting it up online? ConSource, again, has this type of advisory board, and there are, you know, very well-known documentary editors and scholars on that board. And so I think those are just you know, things that are very easy to access on the website, and you can just put it up there so that people know that reputable people with subject matter expertise are participating in the creation of this digital archive. You know, if you're a more sophisticated user, you might be able to tell that some of the documents are inaccurate. You know, but that, again, is going to require someone to have more understanding about, you know, the actual text of the document, or in the case of your radio show, you know, they will have to know that, you know, Heritage Radio Network is a, you know, is reputable, or they know about the subject that you're talking about, and so they can speak to whether or not your broadcasts are authoritative on a particular topic.
So it makes sense, like when people go to your website, you know, what can you give us a sense for folks who haven't visited yet, but I'm sure we'll be jumping on right after they listen to this broadcast, what they're going to be finding and how they should be expecting to kind of use the resource that you guys are creating?
Yeah, so ConSource, one of the sort of values of ConSource is that we don't just give you sort of raw access to thousands and thousands of historical documents. We also provide you with the tools to search and understand those documents. And so, you know, there are two, I think, primary ways of searching. Actually, there's three. One is, you know, if you go to our homepage, there's going to be sort of a Google-style search bar at the top of the screen, and you can just type in whatever search term you're interested in. So, you know, I always give the example of Liberty. Type in Liberty and click search, and it's going to bring up every document related to Liberty on our website. Other ways to search if you're interested in a particular collection, you know, maybe you want to look at state constitutions, or you want to look at the legislative history of the Bill of Rights or state ratification debates. If you click on the library link, which is also at the top of our page, that will take you to our different document collections. The final way to search is through our constitutional index, which actually breaks the Constitution down by clause. And there you can search for clause. So an example would be, you know, if you're interested in legislative powers and you go to, you know, Article 1, Section 1 of the Constitution and you click on All Legislative Powers Clause, that's going to bring up all of the currently known resources on our website that are related to that clause in the Constitution. And I think this is a really useful way to help people access and use the primary source materials on our website, is to actually organize them topically.
Yeah, I mean, that's how I would come in, as, you know, I'm not someone who's not a constitutional scholar, but there is so much in the news right now around certain aspects. You know, I'm thinking in particular the, you know, right to bear arms, and
yep.
people kind of from all different parts of the media claiming that those rights mean kind of one thing or another, and a variety of interpretations. And I think that there's like I definitely personally have an interest to kind of explore that. And I know through the network here, we've talked a lot about that issue, Second Amendment issues, from the perspective of, you know, hunters, because we do have a show here on hunting. And so, you know, there's obviously a hierarchy that your team decides kind of what documents to essentially upload, you know, first or second or third. And, you know, there's, if you're kind of looking in the face of this mass of data, you know, can you talk a little bit about the process of deciding, okay, where do we start? Like, what are the kind of primary things that we want to make sure we get on? And how do we kind of set a plan for continuing to increase access by adding more content to the website?
Of course. So first, I think it's important to talk about sort of the parameters of a particular archive or a library. So all of the content on the ConSource website is specifically related to the U.S. Constitution. So it either has to do with its origins, its creation, you know, i.e. the drafting, the ratification or amendment of the Constitution. So those are really broad parameters. We started the project in 2005 focusing almost exclusively on the founding era and specifically on the unamended Constitution, which is the structural parts of the Constitution and not the Bill of Rights. We started to add content related to the Bill of Rights. We're now actually working on adding a collection related to early state constitutions, including Massachusetts, New York, Virginia, Pennsylvania, and South Carolina. And for your listeners who are interested in the Second Amendment, you know, the Supreme Court in the District of Columbia v. Heller case in 2008, which said this was an individual right to bear arms, they relied very heavily on early state constitutions in assessing that right as an individual right, because a lot of the early state constitutions provided a clearer text than the Second Amendment we find in the Constitution. You know, for instance, granting a right to bear arms for the purpose of hunting, for example. And so I think that collection is really going to shed a lot of light on sort of early experiments in creating a uniquely American political system, and all of these early constitutions informed the creation of the federal constitution. And so, again, in pursuing the content in that collection, for instance, you know, the broad parameter, again, is has to be related to the origin, creation, ratification and amendment of that state constitution. So again, the same broad parameters apply, and we have legal scholars who work with us to ensure that we're choosing content that is informative for the project that we've created here, which is a digital library of materials related to the Constitution.
Yeah, it must be so fascinating to feel like you're almost essentially able to transport yourself back in time and immerse yourself in the conversations that were happening kind of around the creation of this important document. And I wonder for us here at the Radio Network, you know, what it will be like for people to look back at our archives, you know, 100 years from now, crossing our fingers, to have a similar sense of, like, you know, how ideas kind of were formed and how information kind of traveled from group to group, and who the kind of thinkers were, and what, you know, what impacted those decisions. Well, we are going to take just a short break, and when we come back, I want to get into a little bit of, you know, what's making this project possible, talking a little bit about kind of funding and structure, and maybe a little bit about the future. So hang tight, we'll be right back.
Great.
This is Chris Howell from Cane Vineyard and Winery. In our industrial world, most wines have become brands, but the wines I love are so much more. Fine wine is a civilizing substance that connects us to nature. It cannot be stamped out in a factory. If you're listening to this great show, you probably eat different. I urge you to drink different too. Go deeper. Cane5.com.
So far, support the network and become a member. Membership helps us bring you the best food radio in the world and gives you access to thousands of dollars in discounts at the sustainably minded businesses that support us. To become a member, visit heritageradionetwork.org today.
Okay, we're back. We are on the line with Julie Silverbrook of contours.org. And Julie, I'm just curious, you know, when you guys started the project back in 2005, you know, how did you set out kind of identifying a budget and securing funding?
So I actually was not executive director when Consource was started in 2005, but I can tell you a little bit about the origin. So, you know, with any nonprofit organization or any venture, the most important thing to do is that, you know, to first define what your mission is. And here in 2005, the mission was first and foremost developing the technology to allow the creation of a free online library of constitutional materials that could be easily searched by anyone. You know, so the search tools are meant to be as usable by a fourth grade student as they are by a United States Supreme Court justice. In terms of identifying funding, you know, I think just like with any business venture, the first thing to do is to find a group of supportive individuals who either have the financial, you know, have a financial interest or a philanthropic interest in your organization, or can otherwise lend either subject matter expertise or other support. From there, you have to find foundations that are supportive or corporations that can provide support to your organization, and that's exactly the model that Consource used when it was created in 2005.
So can you give me an example, just so folks, we can leave them with a couple of threads of how they might be using you guys for a resource. If I'm, you know, a fourth grader doing a project on the Constitution, what, you know, what would I be looking to you for and what could I kind of find?
Sure. So this is a perfect segue into Consource's civic education programming. So when we started in 2005, we really just envisioned the creation of this library with, you know, really useful search tools. And something we've discovered over time is just giving people access to these materials is just it's not enough. People, you know, they want to be guided through the history. They want to be told a story. You know, if you're an educator, you want to know how to use these in a lesson plan to teach your students, or if you're a student, you want to know how to use this in a project. So, you know, if you want to go beyond just using the resource in a very general way, Consource actually will work with individuals and organizations one-on-one to help guide them through the process of using our resource and using the actual documents on our resource in a thoughtful way in specific projects. And in the education context, we do this both through working one-on-one with educators to encourage them to use primary source materials from our library in the classroom. We will actually work with them to integrate it into an existing lesson plan or work with them to build a specific lesson plan. You know, for a student, you know, we have yet to have a student email the project and ask for help on a project, but we would absolutely love to get an email like that from a young citizen eager to learn more about U.S. constitutional history. We also work with legal professionals and do some pretty intensive constitutional research related. Constitutional research related to contemporary constitutional issues, and we put together research reports that can be used by legal professionals. We just did one on the Voting Rights Act challenge that's currently before the U.S. Supreme Court, and we also just released a report on the Dodd-Frank financial reform bill, and all of these reports can be found on our blog at blog.consource.org.
Yeah, and can you tell us a little bit more about the blog? I mean, I was just poking around there a little bit before the show, and it seems like there's quite kind of a range of postings. And how do people kind of submit to the blog, and what are the kind of vetting process for content that's published there?
Sure. So typically, we invite scholars, historians, or sort of other interested parties to submit a more scholarly post on our blog site. Starting over this summer, we're doing some research with the National Archives at Philadelphia and the National Constitution Center, which is also in Philadelphia, on early civil rights legislation in the post-Civil War Reconstruction era. And at that point, the blog is actually going to serve as a forum for our research fellows to actually post about their findings as they're doing actual archival research. And so, the blog is, I think, generally pretty scholarly oriented. We ask our scholars and our fellows who participate to keep in mind that the blog is consumed by people of varying levels of expertise. So we hope it's something that's accessible to all. But we are a little bit more scholarly oriented than other blogs.
Yeah, and well, I think one of the challenges with regards to really consuming these materials, I think, is language. To use kind of a pop culture example, the movie, Lincoln, that came out last year. I think one of the things that people were so surprised about with, on the language that was used, and people obviously talk different. And I wonder how you help kind of mitigate some of those challenges just with regards to kind of, what people meant by certain words or didn't mean, because as over the, past 100+ years, obviously the context of kind of language has changed quite a bit. And how do you kind of separate those types of understandings from just the actual content or intention, I guess?
Yeah, so I actually think that this is where our supplemental programming comes in and is very useful in helping people interpret and synthesize the materials on our website. So we provide this scaffolding sort of external from the library through reports or through working directly with individuals who are having difficulty understanding the documents. We want the library itself to remain pure, because anytime you provide commentary, you risk injecting bias in your own interpretation. And so when we work sort of external to the library to provide these supplemental materials through reports and educational programs, we introduce this idea that some of the language is ambiguous, and we give you, based on historical context, sort of the best interpretations of a particular text, and we try to give interpretations from a number of point of views, and then we leave it to the individual to sort of settle for themselves what they think the correct interpretation of a particular document is.
And now, I'm sure in your current role as executive director, you have gotten to learn more about the Constitution than maybe you ever suppose you would in your career, and wonder if there's a particular area that for you has stuck out as being particularly of interest or surprising, or something that was unexpected that came up as a result of your work through the project.
I don't know if it's a particular aspect of the Constitution. I'm a lawyer by training, and have spent most of my career studying the Constitution, but I think the thing that is most interesting to me is how self-conscious the people were in the founding generation, like how consciously aware they were of the fact that posterity was going to be looking to not only the official governing documents that they wrote, but also the private correspondences, and that these were going to be used in understanding the governing document. And I just think it's fascinating because it's so clear from reading their correspondences, their letters, their diaries, that they knew that they were preserving those materials for posterity. And I think it's interesting and it's wonderful to hear groups like Heritage Radio Network doing the same thing by creating an archive where you're preserving the discussions you have today for use and consumption by later generations.
Excellent. Well, Julie, thanks so much for joining us today. If folks want to find out more, they should definitely check out your website, www.consource.org. And what's the best way for folks to support you?
We love to hear from people about, you know, sort of the projects they're working on related to the Constitution. And then, of course, you know, if people have the means to support us, either in particular projects by donating their time as volunteers or donating financially. That's something that is appreciated as well. There is a portion of our website where you can donate online, but if you're interested in volunteering for particular projects or finding out more about them, you can email info@consource.org.
Excellent. Thanks so much, Julie.
Yep. Take care. Bye-bye.
All right. Thank you for listening to another episode of Great Content from the Heritage Radio Network. This, like all 30 of our live weekly shows, can be found for free on our website, www.heritageradionetwork.org. If you like what you hear and want to support us, please click that member tab. For $120 membership, you can definitely get a t-shirt or a tote. We'll send it to you in the mail. You can also find our stuff on iTunes or Stitcher Smart Radio. Thanks for listening and stay tuned in.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.